And this one day we come up there, and here this guy had this crab hound, you know, and the dog ran ahead, and I had the old 30-30 with me, and he didn't have no gun. We lift up a cat in a backhoe up there. Here the dog come running around the cabin. And I knew there was a bear there, and the big brown bear's right after him. The dog, well, pretty soon the bear, he turned around, and he run back around the cabin. When he turned around and ran around the cabin, the dog turned around and ran after the bear. Pretty soon, of course, I had the rifle. I leveled a shell in the chamber, you know, and pretty soon the dog comes around the cabin. There's a berm, a ditch, and he's coming up this ditch to us, the dog, and the bear's right behind him. And the bear is only about this far behind that dog, and it's so damn funny, you know. Seemed like he had his mouth open about that wide. He was trying to grab that dog, and that dog was coming to us. And of course, I nailed him. I shot him right in the neck. I killed him the first shot. But we'd have had something on our hands there with that bear, and that brown bear. He was an over 30 feet away from us, I guess. I told this other guy that was with me, I said, I think if we didn't have no gun, I could have outrun you to the camp.
Well, so dogs always do that. How come guys always take dogs with them?
Well, a lot of guys take him, you know, as a companion, you know, out in the woods. And then the dog, well, he'll run around and bear jump him. Well, they'll come to you, more generally. Now, I had a dog here. It was part Labrador and half bird dog. And that dog would let you know. I don't know how far a bear could be away, and he let you know right now. And a bear couldn't come and camp or nothing. And he chased him away, that dog. He was good at it. He was a real good dog to have in the woods. He was a real good dog. But you don't find too many like that, you know. He stay right with you all the time and find them.
What was his name?
His name is this litter of dogs. You know Hubbard, he raised them. They were born on a Friday, so we called the dog Friday. That was the name.
Well, just a couple minutes ago, you were talking about that Hess Creek or something like that, where you're trapping, and it dropped, made this airdrop and stuff that was on this tape here. We were wondering, how was it that people usually did things when somebody would be trapping a country and then they'd leave?
Well, yeah, the lines like that, some guy would quit, you know, maybe, or like this line we took an old timer, Frank Rynoski. See, he at that time he made it a living prospect trapping, and he also prospected up there. Well, he finally got too old, you know, so he just gave up the game, you know. And then we knew him, you know, we knew him for a long time, like, you know, everybody else. And he told us, we got out of the army. Then he said, why don't you go up there? He said, we prospect that summer, you know. And he said, that's a pretty good place to trap. He said, there's with Martin and a little bit of everything. And so we went in there, and he had a bunch of cabins in there, but he was gone so long, you know, and all the roofs caved down and stuff like that. So we went in there and built new cabins. But a lot of his old line, we could follow it good. That went through the spruce timber, you know, it wasn't growed up, you know. But then we chopped a lot of line. And
so that's where you built five cabins?
Yeah, we built five cabins that fall. They were small cabins, 10 by 10, but we built them good. We left live and good. It was the 10th of August when we left live and good, and we backpacked in there and went right in there.
So what'd you have to build that cabin? Just an axe and a auger?
That's all. We just took axes, yeah, and built cabins with them. You can build a pretty good cabin. We didn't take no windows. Later on, we chopped the windows out and put that isinglass in and cut the doors out and hung canvas over, you know, till later on. Then we hewed out some doors. And But this guy, well, I was, you know, knew woods were good, you know, all of my life. I handled an axe, and he was the same way, you know, a great big skookum guy. And of course, we were both young, then didn't take us long to throw up a cabin.
What'd you have for stoves, though?
We got a bunch of them little, they called them camp stoves. You could buy them up in Fairbanks. They were like a Yukon. You know how they are, square flat. And we bought several of them. We also had a tent in that winter. And then we did find one of his cabins that was in it was up at the head of a creek. And the sun used to hit in there a good place. And that thing was just practically like the day he left it. It was the roof, everything was in there good. Only one cabin, and the rest of them, we found three or four more. All the roofs has caved in, but that one cabin was good. But I think it looked to me like he made it out of dry timber, you know, dry trees. And oh, he was a real, that guy, you know, when it comes to building cabins, you know. He had cabins all over that country, and any kind of a cabin he'd practically build would be as big as this one. He really put it. We built ours 10 by 10, our cabins. See, that was a good size. Put two beds, one in above the other, you know, and banked them good and put good lots of sod on a roof. They were real warm, you know, a little stove in there, comfortable. I trapped, and then he quit trapping. He quit, and he trapped one year. He was trapping before, and he decided he's going to quit. So he went work up north for other contractors. And he worked up there a year or two, and then he went outside. His father had a cattle ranch there in Okanagan. And he was getting up there in years, so he wanted him to come in there and help him, you know. So he went outside and helped his old man there. He never did come back.
So then when you guys left that country, what happened to your trap line?
Well, I trapped there about 8 years by myself then. And 1 year my brother trapped with me. And then when I walked away, I just left everything. I just abandoned it. There's traps and everything. There was a tailor-made setup there. Cabins had stoves, and every cabin I had saws and axes. And I must have left 500-600 traps there anyway. I was always going to go back in here, and nobody went in there for a long time after I quit it. Nobody went in there.
So you were always thinking on going back, though.
Well, I never know more, you know. There's guys trapping in there now, you know. The road goes through there, and they're all around there, I guess. Ours, more or less, I trapped ahead of the North Fork and through in there, you know. I used to go in from Live and Good.
What did it make you feel like when you walked away from it and didn't go the next year?
Oh, well, I didn't go back there. Then I trapped around here. Of course, I always lived here, you know, made this my home here. But then I trapped around here, around the North Fork and up here all over. And there's nobody in there trapping, you know. Go all around here. Baker Creek and that. There's only one guy here besides me that was really trapping was Horace Roberts, a guy who lived here across the slough. And he trapped around the river, across the river, and through there. Of course, Jimmy Elbert, and then they were way down there at the mouth, but there was nobody around here.
Well, how did people used to work it out when, say, if somebody left the trap line, you mentioned the one, you know, at Hess Creek, where you knew him, but did people ever just move in on cabins, or were people different than...
Well, at that time, nobody would bother. If you could leave a line, you know, and let it rest up, you know what I mean, build up, and nobody would bother it, you know, for a few years. Once you're really gone, then somebody would move in. You'd practically, say, abandon it. But if you're just a year or two, nobody would ever, very seldom would ever anybody ever come and try to take your line over. It ain't like now where they run off, you know.
Well, how would you compare it to now?
trapping?
Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, trap lines. People having their trap lines.
Well, you had a trap line then, wherever most everybody trapped is just kind of a gentleman's agreement. You never went around the other guy. You know, you had your line, especially where guys established him was there for years. You know, nobody ever tried to move you out or move in on you, you know. Very seldom that would happen. Maybe once in a while some bird would come in and try to pull something, you know, but there wasn't much of that happened. It more or less just gentleman's agreement. Nobody went where the other guy was.
How did people handle it if somebody tried to move in?
Well, if the guy tried to move in, you was a better man than he was, and you moved him out. That was the whole thing.
So he'd snap his traps and hang them up in the tree.
Or run them off, you know. Lower.
Just bring a little bit of 30-06.
Yeah, or grab him by to shake him up a little bit.
So how's that different now?
Well, like around here now, they're all over, you know. The snow goes brings in all these trappers now, easy to trap, you know. They ain't like them days you went out and chopped trails and build your own cabins and everything, you know. You never, or you moved, or some prospector, you know, was in and maybe take his cabin over. Of course, he was gone anyway and fixed it up. You'd find a lot of them cabins at that time. There was a lot of prospecting still going on, you know. There wasn't this easy money around these places, you know. People would have to go out in the hills and stay there all winter, and they were sinking holes, you know, looking for something. There's a lot of that going on. It was all over the country, you know.
Like, so you'd run into guys as you're out, too. I mean, if you're out trapping over the few months, you're going to run into some guys out there, or?
You mean at that time? Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of guys would work a little bit in the summer, you know, for the old road commissioner, something, or out in the mines, you know. And then in the winter, they'd go out, like I say, prospect. Maybe they'd set a few traps around the cabin, you know. They never. But then a lot of them had the line, too, you know, that go back to their old trap line all the time.
But transportation was pretty different, huh?
Well, yeah, at that time it was way different, yeah.
You'd get out there and you pretty much got to stay out there, huh?
Yeah, you pretty much by yourself. Well, you had dogs, see? The dogs or so many guys went up these creeks and rivers, you know. They'd go early and pole up. But there was a lot of that when I was there. They'd go out with dogs, you know, like the natives and that. They'd move out with dogs and everything and take their tents and... Then when the airplanes start coming in, you know, it was making, you could go out there and drop, make an airdrop, you know, drop your stuff, you know, and made it that much easy. A lot of guys would do that. I've done that myself several times, have an airplane drop my stuff, because you'd be so far out, you know, and if you have a dog, you get the lots of snow, say, like a lot of times you can get a foot or two of snow, you know, and one fall, and that's quite a trip, you know, to come maybe 50 miles or 60 miles, break trail and get groceries and go back, you know. And you can gain that much more by, if you have somebody with an airplane, bring your stuff right out there, you know. And at that time, airplanes didn't cost too much, you know. You could hire a small plane probably for 40, 50 bucks an hour, you know, want to bring out 400 or 500 pounds, you know, and drop it. And maybe I've had stuff, a lot of stuff dropped as cheap as $150, dog feed and everything. Well, the fur wasn't too bad. Well, you'd make that up in not no time, or otherwise you'd be beating your brains out, you know, going way into town and coming back out, and you'd lose all that time. You wouldn't be trapping, you know. You'd be dead work, you might say.
So how about trappers around here now? They do it pretty different, huh?
Well, they all got snow goes, and there's roads, cat trails and roads and everything, you know. They don't go like they used to then and build the cabins in.
So they don't have to work as hard as they used to.
No, it's way easier now, you know. When the snow go runs, you know, you can get over lots of country in a day. But then lots of times it's a long walk back to where dogs, you can always get back easy.
How'd you get back last night?
Well, I just walked in, and I wasn't too far out. Oh. It just took me an hour and a half. I was maybe about 5 miles out. But that's the first time I had to walk with that rig back. I wouldn't have had to walk if I'd have had another spark plug. But I already eat two up that time. I don't know.
Well, you got questions in mind. I got questions otherwise.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm really curious about the names of different places around here. Like down in the slough, they talk about like Lottie's Point and different places. And then out the road, they talk about, North Hill.
That North Hill and that all come in when they build the road, you know, the highway in the North Hill, you know, they called it. And going out here now, Baker Creek, where the bridge, they call that the overland too. Well, there was a roadhouse, and when they horses and dogs, you know, there was a roadhouse there at one time before my time, but part of it was still up there. A trapper was using it, and a big horse barn there, and they'd have to stop there, overnight with big loads or lots of snow before they could make Eureka, and that's where it got. They call it the overland, you know.
Where are they going overland from? That's from Tanana River. Going into Eureka?
Yeah, from here to right where the bridge is, you know, where that, across the bridge, you see that clearing in there. There was several cabins in there. There was a couple cabins when I was here.
So they're using those for freighting from here?
From here, yeah, from here. This was a place where they got their supplies.
Uh-huh. So that's for all the mines in Eureka?
Like yeah, that was all the mines around there.
Well... So when did they put that road in from Ivangood going there?
Well, that come in, that was about, let's see, what year did they put that in? About, they start working on it from this end and from Ivangood in about 50, I think 53 or 54, 54 maybe it was. I forget just what year. And they worked on it that year, and then they quit for a few years. And then I think Lytle Green Construction, then they got the contract, and then they pushed it through then. But it was a few years it lay there. They didn't do nothing about it, you know. You could get over it. They had a kind of a little road knocked over with a 4x4 conditions, right? But it wasn't passable, I'd say, you know. Then when Green done all the road work, then they build these bridges, you know, the one at the Hoot. And there was no bridges before that. You had to ford the creek, you know. But then Wehmeyer, he built the bridges.
How did you ford the creek?
When you just drive through? Just catch it when the water was low. Well, the bridge at Baker Creek, there was another bridge in there. But it's put in there years ago when from this end, the old road commission put that in. But this new one wasn't in there. They just built that in recent years. But 57, 58, they built that. I forget what year.
So as you're going out the road from here, between here and Baker Creek, are there any more names for those hills? Or?
Well, no, there's just creeks, you know, Washington Creek and all them, and they're old names, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about going down the slough then? As you go down past Hooks here, there's that kind of a slough that goes off on the left side, or any place that's got names down there?
Well, right here, the morning you leave, you're at the end of the airport where that cabin, Lon Brennan's built a cabin there. There's a slough there. And this old homestead here runs right close by it. And the guy that staked the homestead was an old-timer, Mart Sabin was his name. And they called that Sabin Slough right there. And then the next one, the bigger one, there was a guy who lived here. His name was Bill, and he was a Slav, Austrian Slav, I think he was. And his name was so hard to pronounce that nobody could. So they nicknamed him, they called him Bill the Turk. And he used to make moonshine in that slough. That's where it gets the name, Bill the Turk slough.
Then what's next? Then there's Lottie's Point next, huh?
Yeah, then Lottie's Point. Well, that got Lottie's Point, the name. That come in recent years here. This gal went down there, and she tipped over in a canoe. And you'd beer it up, of course. And so you had to walk back, and somehow it got around. They started calling it Lottie's Point because she tipped over. That's how that got the name.
Let's see.
That's an interesting, you know, to know how places got names.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's that's great.
Dad didn't tell them what she was carrying. They made him go down and pick up. She had 10 silver dollars.
Oh, yeah, she lost. She had a bottle of booze and seven silver dollars. And she would beard up, I guess, when she left town pretty well. And when she got down there, of course, she tipped over, you know. And my brother at the time was living here, and he had a boat. He had an inboard. And so she come up, and she was wet as a rat, of course, had to walk back up. And he was telling the story about her and said that, she said, "Will you take me back down?" She said, "I lost my money at $7 and at this bottle." And he said, "Well, forget about that, you know, just like that." He said, "You'll never find that." He told her, "You're telling me this." And so when they got down there, she got in a bow of the boat and he was steering, and he said he's going real just as slow as he could go. And she said, "Stop, stop." And he stopped all at once, and he looked down, and there was that fifth of booze. He said, "But you couldn't find the seven silver dollars." So that's how it happened. They get around you, people laugh, you're talking about it. He called it Lottie's Point ever since then. But she was living down at the mouth of the slough then, fishing down there, and she had a fish camp down there.
So did they have a name for that before it was Lottie's Point?
No, there was no name. Just nobody.
What's the place they call Duck Point?
Well, that was then you go around Lottie's Point there, you know, and you hit that straight stretch. And that Duck Flats or Duck Point, whatever, you're kind of flat in there. And right across from there, you notice there's another slough in there. Mm-hmm. Well, they call that Rex's Slough. That's the name. There was an old-timer lived right on a river there. Rex Severite was his name. Well, he was here when I was still here. He went to the home from here. And he used to, his winter trail, when he come into town with dogs, he cut across country and he come across the head of that slough. And that's where that got its name. They all called it Rex's Slough. But he was a real old timer. He was down there for years and years, lived on a river. He fished and trapped. And
so he was set up just
right above,
just across from the head of that slough then.
Yeah.
In the river.
He was on this side of the river. Uh-huh. You know, at one time, right, you know where Horace Roberts' fish camp is down there? Well, the river run there before it changed over on the other side. The steamboats used to come right up that side there, and he was fishing right over there, this Rex. I fished with him myself there one time, and Tim Waller, that had the fox farm here, used to have a fish wheel right at practically the mouth of the slough where that point, the bluff, you know. Mm-hmm. He had a wheel there to catch fish for his foxes and his dogs.
Gee, that's all mud flat right now.
Well, yeah, that's all bar in there now. You wouldn't believe that, you know. It's hard to how that river moved way over, you know, way where. Well, it's practically a mile across there now.
Well, what was that like when the steamboats used to come up? They come right up the slough?
Well, yeah, when the river was on this side, they used to come right up here and unload to the NC Company. Ninana would come up here, and they'd come up with barges. They'd drive up, then they'd back down, you know, to the river. And the Alice, the old Alice, and there were different guys come in here. Doc Gordon, he had some boats on a river, and George Black and Dick Dementoff, all kinds of boats come up here, big scows, haul gas and diesel oil and cats. And
well, those are big boats. That's
Yeah, they're all big river boats.
What are they drawing? Probably 4 feet or so?
Well, yeah, when they did 4 or 5 feet, you know, when they... See, the slough was all the time a lot of water in it when the river, well, the river regulated it, you know, but there was more water like right now when the river was on this side, this slough would be full of water, you know. Before they had a good airport, your airplanes would land here in the winter with skis right on a slough here in front of town. And,
kind of rocky to do that now.
Well, yeah, she's always so low. See, there was no... then this guy, Mart Sabin, that had the homestead right where the part of this airfield is, he had teams. He had two teams of horses, and he'd haul wood, and he had the mail contract go out the river and bring the mail in and groceries. And he had an oat field there. And the airplanes would land in the summer with wheels. They'd land in that oat field, you know. He'd let them land. They didn't care. And then they then eventually, when the airplanes started coming in, you're pretty strong, you know, in the country. They the old territory, some deal bought it off of him or something, and he gave him that, bought that strip that off of him, and what's the old field now? But then they extended it a lot further. It was all kinds of brush in there, you know, and woods and that. And the road commission done some work. And then Mean Cy got a contract 1 year. We extended it right to the slough. We knocked all the brush down and graveled it. And that's several years ago. I don't know what year that was. About 10 years ago, I guess. So I made it.
Really, well, that's not very long ago. So what do the guys think about this airport?
Well, it's a pretty good airport now, you know, compared to what it used to be. You know, they've been doing a lot of work. Well, they're doing a little work on it all the time. Like this lower end, they could do a lot more work on it, you know, build it up, because when you have high water, it's all flooded here, you know, this lower end. That's what they should do. Fill it in, build it up, you know. Mm-hmm. Because no more, and the slough comes up, gets high. If the river backs, jams up down there, you know, then the water comes in there. And it's underwater for quite a ways, you know.
Let's see. How about other places along the river? Between... down there by Baker Bluff and up, I mean, and going down river from there. Remember any names of places there?
Well, there was the only, right up above the landing, there was a guy lived there, Jerry Saunders, lived there, and he used to fish, and then he'd feed dogs and for guys around here, and he'd trap up the zit. Then you went up further. There was it's a dry slough now. They call it, and the boats used to go in there, big boats. They called it Agler Slough. There's an island there. And this guy, Bill Agler, was an old timer. He used to cut steamboat wood for the, when the boats is burning cordwood, you know. And that's where he lived there for years. That's where it got the name Agler Slough. But there ain't too many guys know that, and you wouldn't even know where it's all filled in now. It's dry. You can walk. There's no water in it at all. Ain't been for several years. But the smaller boats like George Black and all them, when they were freighting on a river, they'd go through there. There was slow water in there, you know. And
that's right above the landing now?
Right above the landing, yeah. About
on
a,
this side of the river?
On this side, about a mile and a half above, I'd say. Something like that, mile and a half, 2 miles. See, the steamboats used to land right behind Eld's place there at one time. That was the landing. when a steamboat would pull in, you could see it from town here. The dock was right in front there, you know, right? You know, that old road, you've been on that, I guess, that from Els.
You could stand right at the...
Right here at the NC porch there, and you could see the boat.
About a mile and a half down.
Yeah, you could see the boat. And then the channel, start cutting over the other side, and they couldn't get in there. So where the landing is now, they had to build a road in there. The old road commission built that. And me and my brother and a guy by the name of Bob Parr, they had a warehouse. We moved it over there and set it up at the new landing. A guy by the name of Otto Bayless was a road commission foreman down here then when they built the road down there. He was an old-timer.
Otto Bayless, was he Swede?
No, I don't think he is. I don't know what he is, but he's got a son, lives around Tolk. He was a big trucker there, Howard, and he mined around here. And I think he's mining now in a 40 mile at his son, Howard. Of course, the old man, he's been dead for some time. He was one of the real old timers, you know.
So now down there where Al is, that was a homestead down there too?
No, that was nothing there. That was all Bill Burke moved down there first. Young Bill Burke, you know, he moved in there, cleared that off and built a house and all there's some cabins he brought in there from. He moved down from the mouth of the Kantishna. When they started the school there, he had them kids and he had to put them in school. And he's the guy that started that place. There was nothing there. Then Al bought him out and Rose and they were down there.
So there used to be some kind of airfield down there too, huh?
Well, yeah, Ween, right, just before you get there, Ween built a big airfield in there. And they only used it a couple of years. I don't know what the deal was. They were coming in there. They had some run. They'd go all the way from Fairbanks down to Nulata or someplace, and they'd stop here in Tanana and Galena, and they'd come in there with C-47s. And I think it was twice a week, and they had the mail. They had the mail here. And I met the plane there. I used to haul the mail back and forth for 1 year there when they first started. And I kept the airport open. I'd drag it, you know, with a cat and when they had snow.
So they had refueling or something here?
No, they'd never refuel or nothing. No, just freight and passengers in the mail. That was all.
Mm-hmm. That's a big plane, isn't it? C-47?
Oh, yeah. That's one of them army transports, you know. They use them in the army a lot, those C-47s. Mm-hmm.
Well, what other kind of... names of places around here maybe have changed, or people don't know what the old names are and made up new names. Are there other things that have?
Well, I don't think there's been many names around here. You know, it seems like up Baker, of course, Baker Creek where the sawmill was, and. They used to call that bluff across there. There was a Frenchman lived there by the name of Giroux. They'd call that Giroux's Bluff, you know. That was about all. Of course, then you go up to Dugan Creek, and that's about all that. I don't think there's been anything changed in Elena.
How about back over Tofty Way, like Rough Top Mountain?
Well, Rough Top Mountain, I guess that was named ever since they've been around here, you know, and kind of being a rough top and on their maps and everything. And see, they used to go when Tofty was and then places was first hit, they went right over the hill here, you know, with their pack horses, you know, it takes supplies in there. Right over there, right past the cemetery, you know, that trail up there. Then they'd follow the ridge and drop into Tofty. And then later years, you maybe noticed that when you get over by the gravel, that granite pit, you can see over, you can see that outline of a road.
Yeah.
Well, Frank Manley built that in there years ago, and the telephone line went in there too. They went to Tofty.
Yeah.
And then this road here come in recent years. It's in the morning where that road comes down, hits this main road. You probably hear him talk about halfway house, about 7 miles out. That was halfway. There was a couple of cabins there that the freighters used to use if they couldn't make it through, you know, with loads. They call that the cabins is still there when I was, but they were down, you know, nobody was using them. But the main freight used to go over, it'd go down the slough, and there was a guy, L. McLeod. He lived right at the mouth of the slough. You notice that trail, you know about that trail going over the hill? It's all growed up.
Heard about now. It, but I never seen it.
Well, they called it McLeod's Ranch down there. That was the main travel for years. They'd go down there, then they'd go over the hill, and they'd go to Tofty. In Woodchopper, even when I was here. And he had, old L had a couple of teams down there, horses. He'd freight with horses. And the road commission, old road commission, used to keep that road up, you know, in the summertime, do a little work on it. And then he, when they put this, well, then the cats started coming in, you know, the tractors and guys that buying them that was mining out there. Then they started coming this way. You know, the Pleasant Road, you know, and then the road commission and start working on it all the time, keeping it up.
Was that a pretty steep trail going up past the cemetery?
Yeah, just the morning you leave the slough, it's fairly good climb, you know, it wasn't bad, but he had a few switchbacks in it, you know. But he, Al moved out of there. That was the last. I forget what year. He must have moved out of there about 36 or 37, L. McLeod. He moved up to Fairbanks, and he went work for the old road commission up there. He was a blacksmith by trade, and they still had blacksmiths. And then, of course, when the welders and that come out, they put them out of business. But he worked up there for quite a while for him. And he lived to be a ripe old age. I don't know how he's way past 90, you know. Great big skookum Irishman.
McLeod's Ranch, did he really have a ranch there?
Well, they called it his ranch. You know, he had a little meadow. He had it cleared off, and he had this horse barn. And the wife run the roadhouse. They'd serve meals for anybody, and they'd few beds there, you know, and he couldn't make it through, but... At one time before that, when there was a lot of traffic, you know, from Tofty in there, there was a big roadhouse there. A guy by the name of Billy Ford had it. That was before my time. But Tony Lanning, he tore it down, and it was abandoned. And wasn't abandoned. A guy out at Woodchopper, Skaya, had it. And he used it for a storeroom. And then Tony bought it off of him, and he... tore it down for the logs and the iron in it, you know, and the lumber. And it was a pretty good-sized place, pretty fairy place, but that's when a lot of traffic was through there, you know. There was a lot of winter travel them days, you know. That was before the airplane was in here again.
That traffic would have been from here, from Hot Springs over to Tofty?
Yeah, well, they went all the way, you know, at one time when they used that. All the way from Fairbanks and Enana here, and they went right there and then went to Tofty and Woodchopper and over to American Creek and to Tanana. That went all the way to Nome, you know. That was the road at one time.
So did that actually pass through Hot Springs here, or did they go...
They went right through here, yeah.
Right through here.
Yeah,
so
right
through
here.
So they come on the Fairbanks Trail.
Yeah, on the Fairbanks Trail. They come from Nenana or from Dunbar, you know, Fairbanks to Dunbar, and then they cut across the flat and come from Nenana. That was a regular route. Mm-hmm. And the telephone line went that way, too, you know. And they had a telephone here, you know.
Telephones went all the way to Nome?
Well, yeah, at one time, yeah. See, they had soldiers all scattered all through here at one time. Like here, they had four or five there. They'd keep that telephone line open, you know, kept the trails brushed and tripods up and stuff like that. Of course, that was before my time, you know.
And then when the soldiers weren't around, that's when the telephone quit?
Well, it went for quite a while. private individuals had it. When I first come around, you still went to Tananaw a few years, and I think it went down the river too. And, but then it kind of abandoned. It went as far as American Creek. Gus Benson had it. And well, there was a guy by the name of LaRue, I think, had it before Gus Benson. And but then they had they also had a wireless right where the bridge is. They had a wireless with the soldiers at one time. They had a wireless station there, and there was one soldier run it, you know. And then they, of course, when all these radios and that come in, they took him out of here, abandoned that.
Hey, so it seems like for a while there, they had a lot better communication in those days than they did up till just recently.
Well, they had, I guess when the, see, when they had the telephones and that, you know, they kept the lines up, you know, you could, they were good all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. Because you could, when I come around here, yet you could, in the wintertime especially, you know, you could always talk to, you could get Nenana, but that didn't last very long. I don't know, they abandoned that then. But the line was good to, as far as Tolovana and Minto, old Minto, for a long time, and then they just kept dropping off, you know. And
well, what did it cost to use that line, make a phone call?
Well, there was, I don't think there was a cost, if I remember right. You might, if you went over to Benson or someplace or made a call, maybe 4 bits or a dollar or something like that. Be about, but all these people, a lot of people had phones, and they'd so much a month they was paying them. I don't know, $2 to $5. If it wasn't much, $5 a month maybe or something like that.
And that was the kind you got to crank it.
Yeah, you know. But they were pretty well on their way out when I come around here. But then they had them around here, close, you know. They had them all around town, and they went as far as American Creek, and they had them in Eureka, and they went to Rampart, too. They had a phone to Rampart. They kept that up for a long time, to Rampart.
There used to be a lot more traffic between Rampart and here.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of traffic then, you know, before the airplanes, because they used the trail, you know. Then winter, a lot of dogs, you know, and of course, in the summer, there was, they'd walked over, you know, people walk over, but not too much, but boats, you know, within either gas boats or the steamboat or something, you know. The steamboat would bring the mail down here, you know, from Nenana in, all the time. I think got the mail in here. It wasn't too often. And, of course, of an airplane, and there wasn't many planes come in here. They'd come in here now and then, but pick somebody up, or they'd stop in here, see if somebody wanted to go to Fairbanks or someplace. Or in the postmaster here, he'd always get the first-class mail, you know, a bundle of mail. And they were all good, those flyers, you know, at that time. They take the mail to Fairbanks, you know, and take it to the post office. There was no charge, just a... for the community, you know.
You mean instead of hauling overland?
Well, they'd see, you'd get communications that much faster. Maybe you'd have to wait a couple of weeks for the steamboat. Well, if the airplane come in, your mail would get out, you know, and get into Fairbanks. Of course, when it got to Fairbanks, then it went over the railroad, you know, the Seward and boats or whatever, until the airplanes start. Then it wasn't too long, then the airplanes are taking over the contracts, you know, around here. But they hauled mail in with dogs here till just about, well, up to the Second World War, up into there, 42 or 43, they were hauling mail in here with dogs. Then they start switching to airplanes. But they hauled it with from here to Rampart later than that with dogs. Once a week, they'd come back and forth. They'd have a trip. It's Evans, old Jesse Evans had the contract, the last guy, but then there was different guys that get it now and then. I think every 2 or 3 years, they'd let out a contract. But then the airplane took that over, too, you know, from here to Rampart. Blond Brennan, I think, was at the first contract.
No, Jesse Evans, is he connected to Sally Hudson?
Yeah, You know, this Ann Evans that's married, this Ann that's married to Bill Taylor, that was her father. And there's a young Jesse, too, you know. He had it for a while. There's different guys had it, you know. Walter Woods' father had it. Well, that was before my time. They had it, too. And every 2-3 years, they let a contract on a bid, you know, and whoever.
Was that a pretty good contract to get?
Oh, I suppose at that time it's just about a living, you know, or make just a few bucks. Yeah, that's about all it amounted to. Yeah, there's no big.
So those days, compare that kind of thing to say a trapper. Trappers were doing better than a mail contract usually.
Oh yeah, a trapper, as a rule, he done way better than a guy working for wages. You know, way better. See, you're working, when I first come around here, from $5 to $6 a day. And then when they up the price of gold to $35, then they up the wages a little bit to $7 a day. And that was for 10 hours work, you know, like a common labor I'm talking about. Then when the tractors, dozers and drag lines and that come in, then they you get up to about $1 an hour. But the old road commission... I worked on that road when I 1934 from Fairbanks to Livengood. We got $4 a day in our board for eight hours a day and 7 days a week. And we had to have our own bedrolls to sleep in, too.